familiar sort of discussion, don't we? We start off with talking about... Oh, sorry?
Has to make the announcement first.
No, I'll make the announcement in the middle. Let him start because it's late.
Yeah. You get the same sort of conversation about machlekesim and how about bad machlekesim are. And then you're told about good wives, like Mrs. Ayn Ben Peles, and how you should have a good wife. If you've got a good wife, it's good. If you haven't got a good wife, then what you can do about it. And then we talk about things like somebody gets miserable, about he loses his cover, like, for example, poor Mr. Korach was objecting that he was had his hair cut off and he was waved around. A lot of, you know, that's the traditional.
Torreway, Northwest London, 15th of June, Beis Tammuz, Reb Gerald Halibard, on the subject of Machlokes Korach.
No, just the Sedra.
Just the Sedra. Parsha theme.
Parsha theme, absolutely. So I'm going to do something slightly different. At the end of this week's Sedra, we have all of the Sedra is talking about the second year of Mitzrayim. How can you get a Mitzrayim? First year, of course, they left. And then they were given the Torah and the Shavuos, and then they sing with the Egel, and then they made up the Mishkan the first day of Nisan in the second year, then they sent out the Meraglim, and then there was Korach, all of which is in the second year. Go to the next week's Seder, and you enter the last year. Because then we start off, the first story there is Miriam dying. It actually starts off with talking about the Por Aduma, but of course Por Aduma had been given to Klal Yisrael much earlier. It was given at the beginning of the second year, so that's like a sedra. The first story we're told about is in the last year, so we've skipped 37 years between one sedra and the other without anybody talking about anything which happened in the middle. So I thought it might be an idea to actually consider what life was like in this 37 years. I mean, what were they doing there, Dalton, in the middle? How was it? And bearing in mind that all of this is a period of punishment. Clearly it's a period of punishment for the sins that they did. Which could have been occurred in some other way. Kodesh Baruch Hu wants to punish people, always possible. They could have all got flu. They could have all had some chas v'shalom, some serious illness. Or chayam echid ha'olam, Hashem says. He can punish people in Yenevet. And nevertheless, the Eibishter chose this form of punishment of being in the Midbar. And when we come to talk about it, I will explain just how bad it was. Being in the Midbar for 37 years was a total disaster for most people. So what was the aim of this period when they were in the desert? What was the particular sins which caused it? Let me explain. The Chai Veloshana is machalic between punishment and education. I'll give you a moshel. I think many of you know my son David. Yeah? So let's imagine my son David, when he was young, he was a good boy. He never did anything wrong. Absolutely. But Lu Yitzuya, maybe once he did something wrong. So I believed a little bit of corporal punishment did no harm. So he's going to get a smack. Now, let's imagine, my poor David, he does something wrong. I wait 2 or 3 days, and there he is, sitting there, eating his supper, like a good little boy. I come up behind him and give him a flask. Now, that is punishment, yeah? But is it education? The poor boy is thinking to himself, I'm doing nothing wrong. By now he's forgotten what it was that he did wrong. And all he knows is, somehow, out of nowhere, he's getting a punishment. He thinks, less din, but less die. And also, he can't be happy in his life, because any moment, something weird can happen to him when he's not doing anything wrong. Education is, you say to the boy, look, Dobby, you did this wrong. And therefore, I've got to give you a smack. I'm terribly sorry about this. Nevertheless, I'm going to give you a smack because of what you did, and if you do it again, I'll give you another smack. It'll be worse. That's education. How does the Eibishter work? The same sort of way, he says of Chaim Voloshin. The punishment which we are given is meant to be educative, training. So that, he says, is the reason why punishment is midah keneged midah. We're supposed to see what has happened and work out, well, what aveira was it that caused us to receive this punishment. That's why Chazal say, he says, look, he says, at what particular aveira you might have done which would be appropriate to receive this sort of punishment. So that being so, let's look at these 37 years and try to work out, you know, what did they do wrong? How did the 37 years in any way cope and cure it? And the reason why I'm concerned particularly is at the end of the 37 years, they muck up again, don't they? In the next week's Saddler, you're finding them complaining about the Mon. They're complaining about lack of water, they're complaining about Tower Madera, and of course Benais Moyle. So we're still having a process of sin, and yet they do go into Esisor. So what did his 37 years do? Was it Bechina? Those are my problems. What was life like in the desert, and how did that relate to the sins which they did? Sorry? Now, let me just start off with something. It's anyway difficult for us to understand what the sins were of the people in the desert, because, of course, the sins are always exaggerated in all sorts of different ways. Take, for example, the way the Gorn puts it. The Gorn gives a moshel of a mirror. But, do you remember, you must in your youth have read Gulliver's Travels? So if you've got Gulliver's Travels, he says he came once to a country where people were giants. And if someone's a giant, every little small thing becomes bigger if he's bigger. So every blemish, instead of looking a tiny thing, becomes a bizarre, becomes ugh. Whereas if, on the other hand, you go to a place where everything is small, everything looks small, it looks much nicer. Yeah? So the Gorn says, why is it when a woman is trying to put on makeup, why does she have a mirror? If she has a mirror which is not true, it could be just giving you back what she will have. If she has one which either exaggerates or minimizes, she will always have one which exaggerates. Why? Because if you want to see something and deal with it, you've got to exaggerate it to see exactly where it is and to know how to cope with it. So says the Gorn, therefore the Torah exaggerates the sins of, which in the time of the So, for example, Moshe Rabbeinu, we're told, Lai, Ya, Lai, Emantem, Bi, Lahat, Yisheni. Moshe Rabbeinu's got... There may have been an element there, but clearly not enormous, because Moshe Rabbeinu believed in Abish, he'd spoken to him, Peri Oper, Bi, Lahat, Sina. Yeah? So, Torah exaggerates the sins. Yeah. Let me just take an illustration of how we can fail to realise that these sins are exaggerated. One of the very first things we find in the Mitzvah Yidden, when we went out of Mitzrayim, was they came across some, they went out 3 days, and they didn't have water. Didn't have water. So they grumbled. Wouldn't you have grumbled? I mean, here we are, man, woman, children, going into the desert, 3 days, no water. They didn't have Coca-Cola, you know, or tea, or fruit juices. No water. 3 days, no water in the desert. I mean, this is no jokes. And yet, only then, they're coming along and they're complaining, yeah? I mean, it's marvellous. I mean, I would have been, I would expect my kids to be complaining within a few hours. You know, we want water, no? Yeah? And they didn't. And let me just mark this knock on the cooler. I heard a book from the Blaine Gordon, who brought over about a story of the Baron Bax. The Baron Bax gave a moshel like this. What happens if you've got somebody, man, woman, and they're poor, they're living, let's imagine some Komnik, somewhere, place to be, and they're so, he's got no money, so it comes to Shabbos, he has to treat it like Chayil. During the week, they must sometimes have to skip meals, whatever, they're poverty, yeah, can't repair their shoes, can't get dentists, all these things that we hear about. And his parents are also poor, he's poor, his father's poor, Manasseh, yeah, no complaints. But supposing this man, who's so poor, discovers that his parents are travelling first class for one holiday to another holiday, staying in a 5-star hotel, they've got plenty of help in the house, and they're living the life of O'Reilly, as the phrase is, and never their children are suffering almost starvation. They would grumble, no? Now, whether a child has a right to say his parents should support him is another matter. I just pointed out human nature. A child who sees that his parent is not supporting, when a parent easily could support him, will have timers, wouldn't he? Yeah, isn't that right? Too much. Yeah.
Sorry, by Morrow, it doesn't say that anybody had any timers on them that they complained.
So the point I'm trying to, where Baron Bax is trying to make, maybe one, I'm talking about many of the illustrations we've got here. Sometimes they're complaining, yeah?
later, yeah, and other things. Yeah.
So, for me, so what you find, he said, so if Auerbach says, the problem that we have when we look at these stories is Nevesnish Vosva Reiter Fotter Mehot, which they did realize. They heard the Eibishter say, Bonim Atem Lashem Elokeich, we are God's children. And they knew the Kodesh Baruch Hu is HaKol Yochel. And they knew HaKodesh Baruch Hu is an Av, as we say, Alvinu Malkeinu. So they think, it's a, what the heck? I'm going into the desert and there's no water. I'm going into the desert and there's no water. Or there was no bread. They used up the matzah and there's nothing to eat. Nothing to eat. Why is there nothing to eat? The Eibishter can give us water and he can give us something to eat if he wants to. So why doesn't he do it? It's more than that. When we go out on a holiday or any other time with our children, we take food for them. We don't wait until they complain. We don't wait until they're in desperate need. We organise it for them. Just imagine, you and I were going out into the desert with our children, many times a year, we'd have food ready, and at each time, every meal, they'd be given their water, or water, bread, whatever it may be. We wouldn't wait until they've had 3 days of no water, or they're waiting and all their bread is used up, but they've got nothing to eat and they're hungry. That's not how you behave. Therefore, says Rav Auerbach, that's why they were unhappy about it all. Yeah, you cannot understand a different way of looking at what they were, at this grumbles, as it were, of the Yidden in the Midbar. So the Yidden in the Midbar, it's difficult to us to put ourselves into their situation. But let's now look at the suffering that the Yidden had in the Midbar. I think it's easily underestimated just how bad it was. I think you can say it was unbelievably regimented, controlled, and with an enormous amount of istakus b'mu'ut. Let me give you some illustrations. I mean, we all know about, for example, well, I've already mentioned water. Yeah, they were given water. Yeah, when somebody don't give water, they weren't given Coca-Cola, they weren't given fruit juices, they weren't given wine, they weren't given beer. Yeah, water, 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 water. You'll survive, but it sort of lacks a little degree of enjoyment. No, water, yeah, water, water. A bit of a stuck, is there? Then you find mon. Mon sounds good. Mon is nice. Isn't mon nice? Yeah, the Pasuk says it's a piece of bevash. Lovely. Then you start thinking, well, there's some problems with this mon. For starters, the mon was the same mon day after day after day. I don't know what food you particularly like. Just imagine you like steak. Steak. But if you had steak for breakfast, steak for lunch, steak for supper, day after day after day after day, and without anything to come before, like soup, and no chips with it, and no afters, but it's just steak, 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 steak.
It tasted like whatever they wanted.
Ah, yeah. Yes, it's true. If you can imagine, imagination, there's a medrash like this. It's not mentioned in the Pasuk. Let's assume it's not so obvious as just that they want to greet you, but let's assume you can imagine it. So here I take my mon, and I divide it into two bits. I say, that's fish, and that's chips. Yeah? So I've got my fish and my chips. There's only one trouble. Does it look like fish and chips? It don't. All you've got is a mass. Yeah? You know, Chazal tell us that they, later on when they were complaining, one of their complaints, they said, Ve'inenu yevesha, ein kol, bilti el amon einenu, we can only see mon. And for which Chazal darshan on that, that a sumo is like somebody who's dead, viazoi, because one of the great pleasures of food is the fact that they look different. They look different. You know, you've got all these haute cuisine, whatever, you know, they organise it to make it look, you know, different colours and different shapes or whatever. Yeah. It all looked the same. We're saying the sumo, one of the problems of a sumo is he can't see food looking different. He just has to eat it. They only saw this blob of white. Not only it looked, it didn't have a smell. We're not told anywhere it had a smell. One of the great pleasures of food is smell, isn't it? It didn't smell like fish and chips. And it didn't have the texture of fish and chips. So what you've got is fish and chips flavouring. Okay, fish and chips flavouring. Okay. Can you see that that's not one of the most ideal things? So I can see that in the end, certainly, and Eibishter was, of course, right to say, but he's giving them food. And it's ruchniistic food, and he would do great things for their neshamas. And if you went to someone in Auschwitz and you offered him mon, he'd be a happy man, a very, very happy man. And all of us would be happy from time to time. But if you're having it day after day, you'd think, well, can't the Ribbono Shel Olam give us something else? Can't mon look like fish one day? Look like... That's when they got fed up. And they said, we want to chalus a dodo. And we remember these other things. You know, we want meat. So what did they have? They got what they needed, but it was the histabkus. Let's take another illustration of that. You get they're in the desert. They're in the desert. We forget this. When they went out from Mitzrayim, we were told, Atem Yotzim B'Chedesh Aviv. How nice it was that they went out at a time when the weather wasn't so bad. Because later on, it was pretty bad. The desert in the summer, pretty hot. At night in the winter, very, very cold. They were going to suffer the temperatures of being out in the desert. That's no jokes. Now, I know they'd have a cloud on top, which would keep out the sun actually burning them. That's true. But they still had the heat, and they still had the cold. And Chazal explained to us that they had a wind. So don't start thinking they were sort of protected by the cloud. There was a wind blowing in, which was one of the reasons Chazal say they couldn't do Bris Mila. This interesting Chasam Sefer, which says that the Levian, who did do Bris Mila, they were protected against this wind. And therefore they were able to do Bris Mila, and whereas the rest of Klal Yisrael had this wind, and it just wasn't possible, it was just too dangerous. So it's a very unpleasant situation. This wind coming in, hot air coming in by day, cold air coming in by day. This wasn't really nice. Let's take another little illustration of it. What about the fact that they were moving from one place to another? And you never knew when you could stop. I mean, and we've all been on holiday every now and then, you know, you come to a new place. So you unpack if you're going to be there a week or 2 weeks. If you're going to stay overnight, you don't unpack. Now, what do you do when you're in the midbar? You don't know when that cloud is going to go up and you're like, come on boys, off we go. Yeah? So what do? You unpack? Don't unpack? How many goods do you take? You're not going to have many chafetzim around, are you? If they took out a whole load of things from Mitzrayim, I would imagine they left it still in boxes to put onto the chamorim. Because if you unpack it and you all have to go in a rush, it would be disastrous, no? Not surprising Don was behind them trying to pick up all the lost property. Just imagine, you know, you constantly never know where you're going to be tonight. You may constantly have to not just pack your bag, your suitcase, you're going to do a house moving job every day, potentially, without you knowing when it's going to happen and when not. And then, sometimes you're there for a year, and you're happy, and you're relaxing, and then suddenly, off we go. Yeah, it was clearly an onus. This is something which treats and which forces you to be mamayat in your chafetzim, I would have thought. You don't want too many things around the house, and that means you have to be misapples. And then let me just mention one other point. Soriasolis. Chazal, the Mephoshim, were worried about the numbers of judges we had. If you've got 1 in 10 as a judge, that's a lot of din Torahs, isn't it? I mean, how many of you have been in so many din Torahs, yeah? Do you really need 1 in 10 to be a diamond? Doesn't make any sense. Never mind about this. Sorry, Chamishim and sorry, Meos. Why do you have so many judges? So the Mephoshim tell us. They weren't just only doing judgment when there was a din Torah. They were there, with later on Rabbeinu Yonah talks about, birurei aveira. They were there to supervise. So, for example, there'd be 10 people over here, and we appoint somebody in charge, and he's going to check up. Boy, you weren't on shul on time. But I was on shul on time, I was there for brachos. Ah, you didn't have your tzitzit and tefillin on. Yeah, there were people there. Somebody took Lashon Hara. What you doing, Lashon Hara? There were people, these people, their job was to supervise and to correct people. That's a controlled environment. This begins to sound like the British Empire, you know, to join the army. You're under control and being forced to do long walks and marches and I don't know what and all the other things. They get discipline into you. Definitely. So, and one of the other things we see is there must have been a lot of death during this period of time. We start off with 600,000 and we end with 600,000. Over a 40-year period, that's a lot of time. Bearing in mind how many children you would have in the desert, I mean, why should a normal Jewish family in Bnei Brak has how many children? So you would have expected the population to have increased by a factor of four. We're talking about the men. It should have multiplied by a considerable factor of four, no? Don't you think? Why is the numbers remaining static? And one of the answers, of course, the Terech HaDerech, that alone made people too tired, and therefore it works, therefore having children, but also because people were dying. We're told every now and then, Kulon nu avodnu. Kulon nu avodnu. You find, for example, Taveira. They were complaining, those who were misaver for the meat, they died. Then later on you find those people complaining that too many people were dying from Klal Yisrael. They were dying. I mean, you get deaths all over the place that we're told of, massive deaths. It must have been a situation where people were being punished quite well. And again, of course, Rabbi Gurbis trying to talk about the Hashkocha Protis that went on in the Midbar. He said from Isaiah that everybody, when they went out in the morning, they would find their mon in a particular place. It wasn't that the mon sort of, you had to go out and find mon wherever it may be. No, you had your place for mon. So you'd come out of your tent, you walk to that particular place, oh, this is my moon, get Zvik into Haim, and give it to the wife to do whatever she wants to do with it. But if you sinned, it wasn't there. Or rather, it disappeared, it'd gone Vata. I remember Reb Leib saying, so he would say to, you know, remember him, will know how he used to speak, Chaimel, was left as I feel. Was a ticketon, Chaimel? Was a ticketon, Chaimel? What have you done that you now have to run away for your... Yeah? There was the embarrassment if you fail. There was a supervised, controlled environment here, which I don't think we expect and we are well. So therefore, there was a whole system there of control, discipline, histapkus in the Midbar for this period of time. So then my question is, did it achieve the results which it was supposed to do? Now, we've already said that the problem had been that the Yidden showed a certain amount of lack of, grumbling, as it were. But let me point out that there were actually, I think if you try to analyse it, I think we can say that there were two separate types of avodas, even though we're exaggerating to understand it, two different types of avodas. The first type of aveva is, you might call it, the general grumble. We want meat. We want meat. You know, we're fed up with them all. Yeah. And where's water? We want water. Or various other things that they were complaining about. Yeah. This was one type of thing. Or we're going too fast. We can't cope. We're tired out. We need to rest. These were the sort of complaints which you find in the main, which we've already said is something which is really quite understandable from their point of view. Then you get another type of complaint. Not conveyed, but something which is a basic attack on some of our religious fundamentals. So, for example, the Egel and the Meraglim, now, both, of course, themselves are subject to exaggeration. We know, for example, that the Egel was not to make an Avodah Zarah, it was to make an intermediary where you accept that there is a Ribbono Shel Olam, but you want to somehow talk to him through an intermediary. And we know it's only 3,000 who did it, and these 3,000 were the Erev Rav. Okay, well, and the rest of the Klal Yisrael was only Shema. So I must have bought all of this, but nevertheless, making an intermediary is a fundamentally wrong thing. It's a concept wrong. It's not just a human grumble, it's a conceptual failure. Similarly, when it came to the Meraglim, when they came out and said, the HaKadosh Baruch Hu cannot do it, He can't take us into Eretz Yisrael. That's not a grumble. That's saying, he can't do it. That's what the words they use. He can't do it. Now, this denial of the ability of the Ribbono Shel Olam, this is really something quite fundamental. Yes, sir? Now, if we then look at what happened after Parshas Korach, then I think you discover something very different. We still have the grumble, what I call the grumble sin. because maybe human nature is a grumbler. And if you don't get what you want, you grumble. And in particular, you grumble if you think the Kaddish Baruch Hu is your father and should give you things and you're not getting it, so you feel like grumbling. So you find them grumbling they haven't got water, you find them grumbling they haven't written about them on, about Torah and Chaderach. You even find, in relation to Benos Moav, you find that human beings have tivus. We know human beings have tivus, and a person who commits a sin under tiva is somebody who we call is committing an ovayim. An ovayim is somebody who regards, who knows that this is wrong, and he does it because he's got a tiva. That is not called mered. Mered is when you say to Ribbono Shel Olam or whatever, I don't believe I have to do this. What the heck? I'm going to do whatever I want. Mi odayin lanu is the lashon of the pasuk. I can do whatever I want. Now, they were no longer doing odayin lanu. When they sinned with the Benos Moav, it was plain lust. Yetzer hara. Yeah, that's unfortunate. It was wrong, of course, and they were punished. But that's not what we're talking about. I think if you look in what happens after the Parshas Korach, you never find a case of anybody actually saying "Mibli Yecheles Hashem." You never find anybody saying, we're not going to agree anymore that the Kohanim have been appointed to be the people to do the Avodah. You never find them saying, let's have another sort of intermediary. In other words, the effect of this period of, come on boys, off you go for a walk, you know, yeah, whatever you're doing, you have to do it. Being only given the water, only given them on, moving around, controlled, whatever, has actually trained them. The same way you take these rookies or whatever, you put them in the British Army, and you force them to do all sorts of machinical things that they do, like running around and whatever, and standing to attention, drilled and all these other things. In the end, you make a group of obedient people. They may not be happy to be obedient, but they're obedient. That I suggest to you is what happened in the 37 years. Just to sum up in a few words, the reason why the form of punishment that they received in these 37 years was what it was must have been, as Reb Chaim Volozhin says, in an educative purpose. That it wasn't just punishment, it was there in some way or other to train them and to change their behaviour. Because that is the way in which the Kodesh Baruch Hu punishes. Midah Keneged Midah is in order that you should learn from it and behave differently or to train you in one other way, one way or the other. The fact that they were in the sins that they had done, although we said that they were, the Pesukim are exaggerating, and we can see that their complaints in relation to lack of water and lack of mon doesn't sound quite reasonable when you bear in mind that Kodesh Baruch Hu himself, it says he's our father and we are his children, nevertheless, and he hasn't provided these things for us. Nevertheless, these were sins. They should have spoken politely to Moshe Rabbeinu and said, please, can you ask a Kodesh Baruch Hu? Well, all that. That was the one sort of sin, but then they had these other basic sins which where they disagreed with some of the Yesodists, like they argue with the Kohanim, they argue with the Kodesh Baruch Hu's ability, and these were trained by the rather unfortunate lifestyle they had to do in the Midbar when life was forcing them to be istatkus b'mu'ot, things like water only, no wine, etc., mon, with its advantages but disadvantages, people who are, asaras, moving around, all the things train them. But at the end of that, we never find them complaining about these sort of things. Right?
Right. Okay. We on Shabbos. Continuing from last week's halucha, which was on Reish Pei Hei, on the subject of Shnei Mikra Ve'echatagim. Last week we spoke about Inyan of Chayev, we spoke about Inyan of the Mitzvah is excluding the Kli of the Balkoyre.